And good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is State Ex-Rel Council for Discipline versus Jorgensen. Ms. Agana, good morning to you.
Good morning. May I please the court? My name is Julie Agana. I'm an assistant counsel for discipline, and I'm here on the original action against attorney Jeremy Jorgensen. This is the third disciplinary action this court has seen against Mr. Jorgensen. In 2012, Mr. Jorgensen received a public reprimand and a probation period of 1 year for failing to provide competent and diligent representation to clients, for violations of his fee and fee agreements, and terminating representation of clients. Then most recently, in February of 2018, Mr. Jorgensen was indefinitely suspended for a period of no less than 2 years for violations that included failure to provide competent and diligent representation to his clients, failure to meet his obligations to the court, failure to properly supervise support staff, and then failure to cooperate with the Council for Discipline and provide required information. The amended formal charges in the case at hand were filed in November of 2017, and they allege violations that Mr. Jorgensen continued to practice law after his license was administratively suspended in June of 2017, and that Mr. Jorgensen continued to hold himself out as an attorney, both to the public and to other attorneys, also holding himself out as a partner in a law firm after that suspension. It also alleges that Mr. Jorgensen violated Rule 3.316, specifically that he failed to provide written notification to all of his clients if he had been suspended. He failed to assist any of those clients with finding new representation. He failed to provide them an accounting and a refund of any fees owed to them. And he failed to file the affidavit with the court that he had complied with Rule 3.316. And finally, it alleged that Mr. Jorgensen had failed to cooperate again with the Council for Discipline and respond to our request for information. Mr. Jorgensen did file an answer to those amended formal charges in February of 2018, and he admitted all but one sentence of those allegations. That one sentence was later withdrawn, and a motion for judgment on the pleadings was granted.
What was the sentence?
The sentence was the last sentence in paragraph 28 regarding one client who did not have a phone number and address for Mr. Jorgensen, and he denied that that client didn't have information on how to contact him. So we filed a motion to withdraw that one sentence and proceeded.
Thank you.
So the hearing that was held the end of June with the referee was on sanctions alone. Mr. Jorgensen did appear at that hearing and represented himself and provided testimony regarding some depression and some alcohol dependency issues. He admitted most of the allegations and appeared to be remorseful at that time. After the conclusion of that hearing, the referee wrote a report and recommendation, which you have, and he recommended disbarment after hearing all of the testimony and reviewing the evidence. After that recommendation was submitted, neither the relator nor the respondent filed any exceptions to this court, and then Mr. Jorgensen failed to file a brief of this court, so he's not here today to submit oral arguments. When looking at the pattern of noncompliance and the cumulative acts of misconduct by Mr. Jorgensen, a severe sanction, I do believe, is warranted. This court normally has looked at aggravating and mitigating factors, and I think there are a lot of aggravating factors to look at in this, specifically that Mr. Jorgensen has received two prior disciplinary actions and has been severely sanctioned. He has failed to comply with the notice requirements of 3.16, and he's caused harm to his clients. He has demonstrated a pattern of apathy and non-responsiveness to the courts, to his clients, and to the Council for Discipline. The question becomes more the mitigating factors. I mean, obviously, Mr. Jorgensen did file an answer, and he admitted the allegations contained in the amended formal charges. He did appear at the hearing, he provided testimony, and did appear remorseful. But the question that I know that the referee addressed in his report was whether Mr. Jorgensen's testimony regarding the depression and the alcohol dependency could be considered for mitigation. The referee did not believe that they should be, and I will leave that to the court, except for this court has addressed a test under Thompson for whether depression can be considered a mitigating factor. And the things that this court has looked at is whether the respondent has provided evidence of the diagnosis, and then evidence that the diagnosis was a contributing cause to the misconduct, and then whether or not treatment of that underlying issue, whether that would mitigate any further risk of misconduct in the future. Mr. Jorgensen provided no additional evidence other than his testimony regarding that diagnosis. And regarding the Pullen test, under it, the court has said that if an individual admits that if they acknowledge a condition, they voluntarily seek treatment, and then they terminate the substance use, that may be the dependency or abuse could be considered a mitigating factor. That being said, again, I don't know that Mr. Jorgensen provided any additional information. He did testify that he underwent an evaluation and was ordered to treatment pursuant to a juvenile and criminal matter in Douglas County, but he provided no evidence of such. His testimony regarding the treatment was a bit sporadic. He stated that he believed that he didn't need AA because he could stop on his own, and he occasionally just went to different things because of his wife. He did say that he had stopped using substances at that point in time, but we have no evidence of such.
I have a question.
Yes.
It's more of a housekeeping question.
Yes.
There was a hearing about the sanction.
Yes.
Does our clerk have on file a transcript or what we would, in our vernacular, would be a bill of exceptions from that hearing?
I believe you do. I believe the referee filed it with you.
All right.
I hope the referee filed it with you.
Did you review it in preparation for?
I reviewed my copy of it, Your Honor.
Okay.
So I hope that it's been filed with you. I assumed it was filed with the referee's report. I apologize. Okay. I'm getting the impression it wasn't filed.
Well, it hasn't made it to our internal document system, but that doesn't mean it may not be in the clerk's office. We'll check.
Well, there was a hearing, obviously, and so I hope that that is there and you're able to review it. I believe that Mr. Jorgensen was pretty forthcoming about what is going on in his life. He did admit during the hearing, he stated at one point in time that he's not presently fit to practice law, and he isn't sure when he'll be able to do so. He hopes that he will be able to in the future. But when looking at other cases to help to support the recommendation of disbarment to stand out, especially one would be Switzer, that I believe that the referee referenced in his report as well. And in Switzer, that Mr. Switzer had been disciplined several times and then he was suspended for violations. And while he was suspended, he continued to practice law. He failed to comply with Rule 3316. He failed to cooperate with the Council for Discipline, and ultimately this court disbarred him. Arguably, as the referee pointed out, Mr. Jorgensen's unlicensed practice was probably a bit more minimal compared to those of Mr. Switzer in his disciplinary action, but that should be balanced against the extensive nature of the other violations of Mr. Jorgensen. The other case I would draw your attention to was Carbolito, where she had been suspended several times administratively. While she was suspended, she continued to practice each time. She was sanctioned once for practicing while suspended and continued to do so. She failed to comply with 316, failed to cooperate with counsel for discipline, and she also was suspended. She was disbarred. So if there are no further questions from the court, I would respectfully request the court to accept the referee's recommendation of disbarment of Mr. Jorgensen.
What is his current status?
He is still suspended based upon, his administrative suspension starting in June of 17, and then this court disciplinarily suspended him for a period of no less than 2 years beginning in February of 2018. So he's still suspended.
Do you have any comment on whether there is a difference between disbarment and indefinite suspension and whether one or the other might be more appropriate in this case?
Well, I think due to the cumulative and egregious nature of his violations, I do think disbarment is appropriate. That being said, I think by function, adding, an additional 2 or 3 years to his indefinite suspension, so in essence he's suspended for a period of 4 or 5 years, I think would serve the same period of time out of law, obviously, but I think the threshold for him getting back in is harder once an individual has been disbarred. That being said, pursuant to your February 2018 order, there were some things that Mr. Jorgensen needed to demonstrate at that point in time upon reinstatement to this court, an answer for those allegations that he didn't respond to with that disciplinary matter. So I do think that regardless of whether or not he's suspended. Additionally, I know in the Gast case, that individual, he was suspended, and then he continued to practice while he was suspended, and this court added additional time to his suspension. They added it consecutively, not concurrently. And I would say that if this court believes that Gast is more controlling, I think that it would be appropriate to add an additional at least 2 years to Mr. Jorgensen's already 2-year minimal suspension.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone here today on behalf of Mr. Jorgensen? Do not believe so. We will go on to the next case.